Okay, so where we were up to last time was we'd gone through the Psukim and we noted that there are many different implications in the Psukim in terms of what you violate for and where you violate and the like. But then the Gemara comes up with this Gzeira Shava of Seor, right? So if we want to really pick up where we were last time, the question we need to figure out is how do you understand the Gzeira Shava of Seor, right? So one possibility, which is that what? That Lamaskana, right, despite the implied differences, right, Bal Yira'eh equals Bal Yimatzeh. So whatever is true for one is true for the other, and what we learn from here is that you need, let's say, you need some control slash ownership, but not complete, right? Which we'll see is expresses itself in the cases of, right, of a chayiv, right? Of responsibility for the goy's thing. It's not yours. If the goy puts something in your property with no chayiv, you're not chayiv. If you put something with a chayiv, then you are. And this is going to mean that we still need to define, right, the parameters of ownership, and that's what most of the rest of the Amud and Vav and through the bottom of Vav and Aleph is going to do. Okay? But the second possibility is that what? Right? They remain distinct. Right? This is the possibility that we have to examine, is to say that maybe, and we saw in this was the Ritva had really had both answers. Right? One is that Seor says that they're totally the same. The other is that they're same for these purposes, right? But they're going to remain distinct. So we saw that the Ritva himself raised both possibilities. What we're going to move on to now is the Rambam. And again, we're not going to exhaust this sugya, but at least understand the main directions here, okay? So despite the Ritva who says, right, if you want to look back at the Ritva, right, he quotes Perish HaRa'azal, or Elzut Chazara, Perish HaRa'azal B'Shem Rabbo. The Ra quoted from his Rabbi, the Ramban, Dechim Dechziva Gzera Shaveh, since there's the Yeshiva, Hareyu K'ilu K'tivei Trovayu B'Batim B'Gvulim, it's as if both Bar Rabbi Matzah are said in houses and in Gvulim, V'afilu B'Gvulim over B'Shneyem, and even in the boundaries of your, right, boundaries of your property outside your house, you violate both. The chayv and shekain, and once you say that, tulo shari tamun bikulin, and once you say that, so even something which is hidden, right, which you might have thought violates lo yimatzeh, but not lo yira'eh, but is hidden from view, is not permitted even outside your house, ki heichi de lo sharin in mabatim, just like it's not permitted in your house, right? So possible, this is the Ritva B'Shem Ramban, right? B'Shem Ra'ah, B'Shem Ramban, right? Second possibility, v'acherim perishu de lo anik zeru shaveh, elalitin kula de gvulin bebatim. Maybe the zeru shaveh only helps to make it more lenient, l'mishrei shel acherim shel gavoa b'lo achrayu. Right? To say, right, so this is Ritva 2, is they're distinct. So he says, what does the Gzeira Shava do? It tells you that without achrayu, right, that you didn't accept responsibility, right, you don't violate, right, with chametz of a goy, right? V'litin chumra debatim b'gvulon ha'meisar ba'achrayot. And that if you had achrayot, you violate in both, right? Avaleke b'gvulon el alav d'lo yereh b'lechud. However, lo, right? However, what does he say? What halachic difference is there? That if, right, chametz is not in your house, but is in your property. So what does the second possibility say? You only violate while you ride, and not while you matzeh. Right, so ritva number two tells you, what? Because lo yimatzeh says bevatechem, and bal yirah says in gvulin. You do. So in your house you violate, right? In your house you violate possibly two, right?
You might say could possibly.
Right, but the point is that in gvulin you only violate bal yirah. Maybe in your house in the same circle you violate both, but the point is that they're distinct. Right? There are cases in which you can violate Bal Yirah without Bal Yimatzeh. Right? So Ritva number two tells you that they are distinct. The Rambam, right, both in Mishneh Torah and in Sefer HaMitzvot, very much believes that these are two Isurim. Now the question is, practically, they are two, or only conceptually they're two, we'll have to examine, but the Rambam consistently believes that they are at least conceptually distinct. Right, so we can start either with the Sefer HaMitzvot or the Yad. I don't really care. Right, maybe let's do the Sefer HaMitzvot because there he's actually counting mitzvot. So this will help, and then we'll go back to Mishneh Torah. So if you look at the second half here, right, the mitzvah in Reish and Reish Aleph says HaMitzvah Matayim, the 200th mitzvah, Hu Sheiz Harnu Shlo Yireh Chametz Bechol Gvuleinu Kol Shivat Yamim. The 200th mitzvah is that you shouldn't see chametz in your boundaries for 7 days. He said these two lavim are not totally different, they're one. Right? So that sounds like what? The first one. Right? However, as we'll see, he counts it as two separate evens, right? So he says, "Uver amru petach padach adu v'chametz v'sim v'so'or," and that's right. He reads another Gemara to point in this direction. The Gemara in Beit Sadav Zayin that says that the pasuk opens with chametz and ends with so'or. Lomer l'chaheinu chametz hanu so'or, to say that at least the diukim you might have derived from the fact that some psukim say chametz and some say so'or are irrelevant. Klomar ein efresh bein al chametz atzmo v'in adavar machmitz, to tell you there's no difference between chametz and that which makes chametz. Umishavar v'niya chametz birshuto einu chayav malkut. However, the Rambam says that you're not chayav malkut if you leave chametz in your house because it's passive. The Rambam does hold on call it laka chametz bepesach v'kanao shia ose maaseh. But if you buy chametz on Pesach, you do violate actively, and therefore you get malkut. Skip to the next one. A mitzvah reish aleph, he shizharnu mihi matzei chametz birshuteinu, v'filu lo yeh nir'eh o haya pikadon. We're also warned to not find chametz in our house, even if it's not visible, and even if it's not ours, it is a pikadon. V'amro shivat yamim sorli matzei bevatechem. V'zeh gam ken here too, in theory, you can get malkut if you violate it actively. Okay, right. So if we stop there, right? So the Rambam, on the one hand, says that the surim you seem to violate, right, the same. However, the Rambam at least counts them separately, which means they're at least conceptually distinct, right? You're right. They're not collapsed to the point this is one Isser, right? They may be two Isserim that you always violate at the same time, but they're at least conceptually distinct. If they weren't, the Rambam wouldn't count as two mitzvah. That would violate his rule, right? One of his rules in Sefer HaMitzvah, right? Is you can't, right? Sort of. So there's a rule of kim levi d'rabba mine, but there are right exceptions. If the same act, right, so if you eat like a bug and violates five Yisurim, you get five malkut, right? If you do two different Yisurim that bring two different punishments, and one of them is stricter, then it subsumes it. Right? That wouldn't happen here. Say that again? You have bread in your mouth.
They're the same punishment, but you have two different things that are about the same punishment.
Possibly. Right? It doesn't sound like it, but I guess it's possible. Now, if you look how the Rambam formulates it in Chametz Matzah in Perek Dalet, he writes, "Katuv b'Torah lo yireh lecha chametz." The Torah says, "Don't see chametz." Yachol im kamanoto oiv kiroto biaragoyim. I might have thought that if he hid it or deposited by non-Jews lo yeh over, I might wouldn't violate tamalomar soar lo yimatzei b'vadechem. Right, so that's what lo yimatzei tells you. Afilu hitmino of kido, even if I hid it or deposited it, yachol lo yeh over elm kein haya chametz beveto. I might have thought you only violated chametz in your house. Aval maya rachok mi beito, but it's far away from your house. Besadel biracheret, in the field or another city, lo yeh over, and you wouldn't violate tamad lomar b'chol gvulecha b'chol reshutecha. You violated all of your property. Yachol yechayv levar mir shuto chametz shel goy o shel ekdesh. I might have thought that you have to get rid of that which belongs to a goy or belongs to the Beit HaMikdash, Talmud Lomar, lo yiro'eh lecha, shelcha yetaro'eh v'ataro'eh shel achirim, halamata shel chametz Yisrael. So what do you learn from this? That chametz belongs to a Jew. Emenicho b'yershuto, if you leave in your house, afilu tamon, even if it's hidden, afilu b'yaracheret, even in another city, afilu mufkad b'yad goyim, hareza over mishum lo yer, yiro'eh v'lo yimotzei. You violate both, lo yireh v'lo yimotzei, the chametz shel hekdesh o shel goy sha'etel Yisrael, and if you have a non-Jew's chametz or kodesh chametz, afilo aya imo babayit, even if it's in your house, or is a mutar mipnei she'en hashalav, it's permitted because it's not yours. But afilo aya shel gertoshav, even if it's a gertoshav, right, a non-Jew who keeps the sheva mitzvot, shiyad Yisrael shalotet alav, and he's under Jewish control. Ein govino delotzia chametz mirshuto b'pesach. We don't make a non-Jew get rid of his chametz on Pesach. Aval tzarech lasut mechitza givoa asar tvachim b'fnechem. So shel goy shema yavol yistapik menu, but you do have to put up a wall of 10 tvachim so you don't end up using it. Aval shel hektish einu tzarech mimneisha kol parshim and hektish kadesh lo yavol lidei mi'ila.
Okay, so what does the Rambam think?
It's a little bit unclear, right? Because the Rambam definitely thinks what?
They're
conceptually distinct, but are they practically distinct? And what's going to be the proof that both Avi asked and Kobi asked?
To be honest, right? The way to figure out whether Rambam thinks they're only conceptually distinct or practically distinct is going to be the Malka question, right? Is do you get one or two Malka for violating it? The Rambam is never
explicit about it. So look at the Kesef Mishnah. Sorry, I didn't bold it, but at the bottom of the page. Katav Ra'im. The Ra'im. Who's the Ra'im? Mizrahi. Who is he? Who is he, Kobe? Okay, Mordechai's looking up the Reim. Who is the Reim? Oh, you found him. Who is the Reim? Good. 1455 to 1525. He lives in?
What?
Where does he live?
Constantinople.
Very good. I mean, I knew his basic years. I knew he was from Constantinople, and I did recently read a book on the all of Jewry and that thing by Mina Rosen. So
sure.
I wanted to internalize that.
Over the summer, not that recent. It's a good book though. Okay. Anyway, so the Reim says v'yesh l'tmoa d'bashur shneri she'ein lokin. So the Kesef Mishnah says, what I think is, you get one Malkut, even though it's two Lavin, right? So the Ritva, number two, suggests there's actually a practical difference. The Rambam suggests there's a conceptual difference. The Kesef Mishnah assumes that it's only conceptually distinct, but not practically, right? Practical, that's a guess of Mishnah. Ah, right, so that's an interesting question, right? It's a, definitely a weird category, right? A weird model, right? To say that, now, well, you tell me, right? And this is very lumdish, and we can't get into this too much, but what would it mean for something to be conceptually distinct, but not practically distinct? Right? I mean, what is this meaningful? And the Kesef Mishnah assumes that there are two lavim, you only get malchus once, right? Which is another way of saying it's conceptually distinct, not practically distinct. So then what does it mean, Avi, for it to be conceptually distinct?
Yeah, maybe one encompasses another.
I don't know. So here's the thing, is we saw this also a few years ago when we did Menachah, in the context of Lavan and Chelet, right? Where Lavan and Chelet are practically distinct, but not conceptually distinct, right? They get one mitzvah in the Rambam, right? But they're clearly practically distinct because you can fulfill the mitzvah without, right? You can have Lavan and you still are Yotzei mitzvah, right? So there, what you see is the Rambam seems to have this idea in general that you could, it could be, right, that certain things are practically different, but they're fundamentally the same, right? And there are certain things that, when I own chametz, according to the Rambam, what it sounds like is, I really am doing two different things. It happens to be that the gzeirah shavah of Seor Seor makes it that these completely overlap, right? And therefore, there's only one punishment. But those diukim that we saw are not meaningless. They're meaningful in the sense that at like a conceptual level, I really am doing two different things, right? Lo yira'eh has one set of values attached to it. Lo yimatzeh has a different set of values. They happen to always overlap by the time I have the gzeirah shavah, right? But the Rambam seems to hold, but I'm really doing two different things. Well, no, meaning it's, the point is I'm doing, no, that would be the same punishment, not, I mean, if you did both at the same time. No, that wouldn't be the same. You get malkut for a lot of things. The point is that even when you violate both, the Kesef Mishnah, you get one malkut. Right, so according to him, it's a weird model, meaning at some level we recognize the distinction because you're doing two different things. But the other hand, right, the Gzeirah Shavah ties them together such that you get Malkut once. Right, that's the case of Mishnah's Suffolk. However, the Kesef Mishnah isn't sure about this. Right, he knows that this is right, meaning the Kesef Mishnah suggests this, but what is that implying according to Kesef Mishnah? They could be wrong, and if he's wrong, and you get two Malkut. Then what would that mean? That the Gzeirah Shaveh means that practically you violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh. Like the Gzeirah Shaveh carries over the halachot from one to the other.
But not the fact that they're now the same
thing. Exactly. Right? Meaning if the Kesef Mishnah is wrong, then what you say is what the Gzeirah Shaveh does is it makes them look the same. Right? But in fact, but you are really doing two things, right? Meaning they are different. And you are owning chametz in two different ways, right? So if the Kesef Mishnah is wrong, you would come to this very big kiddush, is that Seor Seor makes it that practically, right, you always violate both at the same time. And nevertheless, you really are doing two different things. So you continue the Kesef Mishnah. He says, makati kasha, heyach menon b'shnei lavin, right? So get the riches that I don't understand, right? He says, I think that what the Rambam would tell you is they're conceptually distinct, but they're practically the same. Problem is, obvious problem, is that's a meaningless statement, I don't understand. According to that, then you should count it as one lav, right? If they literally always overlap, then what does it mean that they're conceptually distinct, but practically the same? That's called being the same. Right? I don't understand that you're just like splitting hairs here, but like, you know, this sounds like an identity statement to me, right? Right? A equals B. It's called identity, right? They're the same. So what does this mean? So what does he say? Vanirbe and I do lo yira elo mashma el trunira leinayim dafka. So he says, no, lo yira e implies. So now the Kesef Mishnah changes his tune a little bit, and he says, no. What does lo yira mean? Screw that into the wall. We don't even have anything. It's pointless. Pointless.
You may have noticed that Yeshiva is not really up to deal with this many kids.
We just put it up to save face.
Yeah. So the Kesef Mishnah first suggests, and now let's, right? So, Kesef Mishnah 1 is what? Is practically the same one Malkut, right? Kesef Mishnah 2
possibly
is no. Right? No. Right? Because he says, I don't understand what that means. If you violate them always at the same time, they're the same thing. So possibly two is no. Lo, delo yireh lo mashma kshu nireh le'inayim dafka. And therefore, what does dafka mean now? If it's hidden, even the maskana, what does he think? Right, so Kesef Mishnah 2 is that no, they're actually practically distinct. Right, if I don't see it, I only violate lo yimatzei and not lo yireh. It's buried. It's buried. You don't see it, you know it's there. No, lo yimatzei says you can't have it found in your property. Therefore, if I could find it, even though I didn't see it. No, if you have chametz hidden in your property, you take your Oreos and you hide them, now you've moved them from your pillow and you bury them in the backyard. No, it's lo yimatzei, it's not lo yireh, because you don't see it, but it can be found. Your chametz can be found in your property. So the Kesef Mishnah in the second possibility suggests that if I hide it, tamun. Right, the Gemara brought up the case of tamun. So he says, no, even the maskana, the Rambam will think, that I only violate lo yimatzei, the ownership that is implied by lo yimatzei, if I can see it. But lo yireh only tells me that it only allows me to violate, only causes me to violate if I own it and it's visible. Not necessarily. So not necessarily, right? That goes back to what we talked about with Bedika and Bittul and all that. Is what if I searched for it and I did Bittul, or I did search for it and never showed I didn't want it? All those cases might be different because, right, you might have tried to destroy it. That might count as Bittul, all those complications, right? But here, no. You decided, I'm sorry, that you just, Pesach notwithstanding, you can't give up on the Oreos, so you hid it in the backyard as your treasure, right? Right? So the Kesef Mishnah says, you didn't, you weren't mevatel it. You really wanted to hold on to it, but you didn't keep it in your house because your parents would be upset if they saw Oreos. So then, according to the Kesef Mishnah, according to the Rambam, you violated lo yimatzei, but you didn't violate lo yireh. Right, so the Kesef Mishnah himself is struggling with this question, is what does the Rambam mean? Does the Rambam mean that they're conceptually distinct but practically the same? Or is that a nonsense distinction? Right? And therefore, they're only different if they actually look different. And therefore, he has to come up with a nafkamina. His nafkamina is that if it's hidden, you only violate lo yimatzei. Yeah, in which case they're actually separate. Now, I would assume, though he doesn't say it explicitly, that according to that model, he doesn't say it explicitly, it's possible that, that what he means is that you get two malkut. That normally you get two malkut, right? Because once you say that in theory you could violate one without the other, when well, I actually violate both, correct, right? It sounds like, according to the Kesef Mishnah, okay, though I'm not 100% sure, that once you say that they are practically different, then in a case when you actually manage to violate both, then you'll be chayav malkut twice. But in a case when you only violate one, like it's in your house, but it's not
visible.
But it's not visible, so then you get one, right? Once you say they're practically different, presumably, right? And that's what he says. Umashikah the Perek Dalid over Mishum Bayra Valiyimatse. So now he has to deal with the Rambam in Perek Dalid, because the Rambam there say that whenever you do it, you violate Bayra Valiyimatse. What does that imply? That they're practically the same. So he says, "Lav lemeimer debechol echad min iskarim leil over bishneihem." It doesn't mean that in every case when you own chametz you violate both. Elahechid detrai shaychid travayu over bishneihem. It just means that you could, under certain circumstances, violate both if you check the boxes of Lo Yirah and Lo Yimatzeh. The Chol Hecha, the Avar Lo Yirah, Avar Nami of Lo Yimatzeh said practically, Lo Yirah is more, Lo Yimatzeh is more expansive, and therefore, you're always going to violate Lo Yirah if you're violating Lo Yimatzeh, but you're not always going to violate Lo Yimatzeh just because you violate. So you're not always going to violate Lo Yirah because you violate Lo Yimatzeh, and that's enough to make them distinct. Avo v'tamin lo avar el alo yimatzeh. Well, derech zeh yish lefarish gam abrayt eshnuya berek amizogim shemar laram dinam halalu and eskar v'berek dalet. So what you see is the Kesef Mishnah himself thinks that, right, the Rambam clearly thinks they're distinct. But the question is what? So possibly one is they're conceptually distinct but practically the same, and this apparently still is meaningful, right? Somehow. Possibly two is this, which is, right, conceptually distinct but practically the same is meaningless gibberish, right? And there's another way of saying that they're the same.
I like that.
Right? Right? That's right. So this is, in which case, the Kesef Mishnah says the only way of making sense of the Rambam, who does distinguish, is to say no, that they are actually practically different. Right? So the Kesef Mishnah isn't sure whether conceptually distinct but practically the same exists. And therefore, is another way of saying this, that the two Yisurim remain distinct, even Maskana, or is another way of saying they're the same because this is gibberish. Okay? And if that's the case, then the Kesef Mishnah moves to possibility number two, which is that they're different and there are times you can violate Lo Yimatzeh and not Lo Yirah. Okay. Yes. A general question about the legal system in Judaism. Should I sit down?
Sure.
Ah.
If we need a natural law that are outside of our setting, nowadays it would be trapped by these kinds of legal events.
Yes.
We wouldn't make those laws.
Is this related to our current Sugya?
No, I think it's
better. It's a complicated question. If you want, one of my rabbis in the middle of giving a podcast series on this topic. He just put out number 6, which I haven't listened to yet, because that's how it came up this morning. But if you'd like it, I can send it to you.
Okay.
Fine. Okay, so are we clear on these two models, right? Are we clear? Right, this is the major question in 5b, right? And the Gemara in 5b is that whole long extended Xer HaShaveh, right? Is what is it doing in the end of the day? Is it collapsing these two Yisurim into one? Or is it telling me that they're the Ritva number two, they're actually distinct, right? In many cases. Kesef Mishnah, they're at least distinct in one case, right? Or maybe this middle category called conceptually distinct but practically the same, if you think that's meaningful. Yes? I said Kesef Mishnah 1, Kesef Mishnah 2. Kesef Mishnah 1. Kesef Mishnah 2 says this is meaningless, and therefore it must be there's a practical difference. Right? Kesef Mishnah 1 is no, they're the same, but you get they're right. It's two Yisurim, but you get one Malkut, right? Which implies conceptually distinct, but practically the same. Okay. This is first half of Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh. Okay, is this issue. The next issue that we need to deal with in Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh is that what's clear from the drasho And then, again, this issue is going to take us. I probably should have waited for you to write the picture, but I already did it. Sorry. Is that the major question we need to deal with now is that the Gemara already tells us that what? That Nimatzei tells me
that what?
That ownership here is different. Right? It is one thing. Some form of it is necessary. Let's say it is, in some sense, needed, but two has different definitions.
Right? Right, that's what we know so far, right? How do I know? Right, how do I know that in some sense it's needed? Where did I get this from the Gemara? Lecha, right? The Gemara says, yours violate and not, right? Lo shel goy and lo shel gavona, right? How do I know that it has different definitions? So this is a whole set of cases in the Gemara, but right, the clearest one right off the bat is, the Gemara's first example is what? Achrayim is where, if I accept a non-Jew's property into my house, and I accept responsibility for it, I'm liable, right? Now, the question you have to ask within this definition is, what is the definition here? Now, there's two possibilities, which is what? What I learned from this is ownership is not really needed, right? Right. One extreme is to say, yes, I need lecha, but the fact that I can be violent with the goyes, as long as I took responsibility for it, shows that ownership is not really needed.
But you need
right? Right. I need something, right? And then you'd have to say that it needs something called lecha, but lecha doesn't necessarily mean ownership. Or I have to say that a chrayot in all the other cases are what? Are partial ownership. Right? Meaning when the Gemara says, I need, right? We've now moved on to the second question. Right? Is once we laid that out, now we have to deal with the fact that Gemara says, okay, there are two things that are clear. One is that to violate by Rabbi Matzah, you need lecha. So you need some sense of ownership. On the other hand, it has different definitions here as proven from the case of Achrayot. Right? So that's the question, right? So that's exactly the question, is what is the Gemara teaching us? On the one hand, it establishes the lecha. On the other hand, it tells you if the goy owns it, but you took responsibility, you violate. Now, what is it teaching you? One possibility is that a chayat will not foot full ownership is partial ownership, right? And that's enough, at least for chametz. The other is to tell you it was wrong to say you needed ownership.
And
right?
The lecha is a much weaker.
Correct. Now, this sugya assumes that what? Right? The standard for chametz ownership is stricter. Right? Meaning, even something that seems to not be ownership in other things is going to be ownership here. But remember, we've seen about 10 times already this year the possibility that the standard is also
less strict.
It is less strict. Give me an example of less strict.
You can just give the Bachelor. Oh.
Tosfot and Chavtet, which you've seen 10 times. What does Tosfot and Chavtet say?
Well,
that if I own chametz, but I'm holding on to it in order to destroy it, I don't violate. That Tosfot tells us that at least sometimes by chametz,
Even if you own it, it's not...
Right, which is less strict. So now, one second. So if that's the case, right, if we know that sometimes the standard for chametz is stricter and sometimes it's less strict, so you can either therefore say that chametz is, that ownership of chametz has certain leniencies and certain stringencies, or
you could look for a unifying principle, right, and say that what's needed on Pesach is not really ownership, it's something else, right? It's,
I don't know, you can't relate to it.
Yeah, it's something like, as we've talked about before, it's about relating to chametz, and therefore sometimes relating to chametz has stricter implications, and sometimes it has weaker implications, right? Because if I accept responsibility for chametz, I am now clearly relating to chametz, and I am desiring, in some sense, for it to continue to exist, because otherwise I have to pay money. But sometimes I could own chametz and not violate because I'm holding on to it only to destroy.
That's not classic,
right? Exactly. So the question is, are these just anomalous that sometimes I have stringencies and sometimes I have leniencies, or do we say that no? The whole point of this Gemara is that chametz is sui generis.
What's the word?
That's two words in Latin. It means
sui.
Sui.
Generous.
Oh, okay.
Like yes, very generous. Very good. Like, no, not at all. Come on.
It's a different language.
Right?
Yeah, but where do you think the word comes from?
So what is it? What do you think it means? Well, what? You tell me. What does it mean? What's generous? What's generous?
Like
genre. Okay, yeah. So sui generis is of its own kind. Meaning, it's of its own category. Right? Meaning unique. Meaning it belongs to its own category. Right? Of its own category.
Okay, thank you.
So unique. Are you happy?
Yes.
Sui generis means of its own category. Yalla? Okay. Good. So let us... So again, I'm not really sure how we're going to do this because I don't want to spend forever on it. Tomorrow I've made another source sheet that sort of runs through some of the issues on the bottom of Hey Amud Bet to Vav Amud Aleph. Right, and I put a few here, but we're not going to go in depth into every single case because we could go in every one, Tanai and Dever Hagorim Lamamon and Mashkon and Arnona and every single case. But to do that properly, what you need to do is say, oh, do you violate owning chametz by a Mashkon? Well, what is a Mashkon? Call it Terakula, right? We could do that, but we would never get out of this. And I think guys want to start moving, as do I, and, you know, because I think you guys will go crazy if I do that. So I'm going to try to sketch the basic conceptual models of the next basically amud and a half. And then I found a Hanukkah topic to do, sort of, because I don't really do Hanukkah topics. But the bottom of Amud Aleph, which is a very interesting sugya, is the chiyuv to learn the halachot of the chag 30 days before, which is a very interesting sugya. Yeah, it's the bottom of Amud Aleph. That's a very interesting sugya. And there is an interesting discussion in Poskim whether it applies to Hanukkah and Purim. Is it in Yom Tov Daraita, Darabanan? So it'll, at the very end, deal. But really, the lump is interesting, and it gets us out of chametz for a little bit. So.
And then also, if there are three young children coming up, which one do you put in priority?
Yeah. Anyway, so what I gave you here, though, is just a few possible implications of exploring this ownership issue. So the first one is something we already did on 4A, when we did the case of rentals. But I'm going to remind you about it, okay? And that is, what about another Jews chametz? Does lecha remove this? Right? Because the Gemara says lecha is lo shel goyim, lo shel gavoah.
Right,
what about if you have another Jews chametz in your house? And that came up, remember, in the case of Socher Maskir. Right? Remember that? Remember that? When we joined with the Regensburg Shir, we did that sugya. Remember, Socher Maskir rental. So Rabbeinu David, if you remember the time, Rabbeinu David had said, if neither of you do bedika, so who violates Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzei? What did Rabbeinu David say? It's not Rabbeinu David. Rabbeinu David had said, taking the lenient position, which one?
That neither.
No one. No one violates, right? No one violates, right? No one violates. So according to Rabbeinu David, what do we learn? That lecha, right?
Needs to entail both of these.
That lecha literally means ownership, and therefore?
If none of you entirely own it, because ownership has these two qualities.
Correct, it's got, right? However, right? Look at the Gra. The Gra just gave you the summary. I gave you this already. That's why I'm running through it. It's a fascinating sugya, but we dealt with it, if you remember. Right? He quotes, Lama Zemu Shagasav Hey Amud Bet. Avalatora Vahulay. But Ayan Rashi, Sham Shapir Shalachirim, Eino Yehudi. Rashi says that Shalachirim means only other only non-Jews. Dibishel Yisrael Asur. But if I'm holding on to another Jew's Chametz, it is Asur. And I'm only Potter if I have a non-Jew's property, a non-Jew's chametz on my property. And look at his last line, Udloka Bacham Magen Avram. Not like the Bacham Magen Avram. The Bacham Magen Avram say, like Rabbeinu David, that if I have some another Jew's chametz in my property, do I violate? No. According to Rashi? Yes. Good. So now if I come to this thing and I say, what is needed in the ownership of chametz? So according to Rabbeinu David, according to Bach, according to the Magen Avraham, that if I have another Jew's chametz in my house, I do not violate. Why is that? Because what do they say? That fundamentally, they are going to bring lecha, right? They say, you need ownership, and then what are they going to do with something like achrayut? Probably push it towards saying the reason you're chayav by achrayut, right, where I accept responsibility is because I have partial ownership. Because what do you see according to them? That I only violate Balei Rabbeinu Matzei if I own it. And therefore, if another Jew's chametz is in my house, they say you can't violate because you don't own it. Right? And therefore, what they're going to have to do in every case that looks like it's lowering the bar for ownership, or saying that you violate even without ownership, what are they going to have to do? Say, move it over to here and say, even if there's an expansion of ownership, it's not because you don't need ownership, it's because all those things that look like non-ownership are at least partial ownership, right? What about Rashi? What about Rashi who says that, no, if I have another Jew's chametz in my property, I automatically violate.
Because
he says that lecha, right? Rashi is mechadish. Lecha doesn't really mean ownership. What does it mean? Exactly what the Gemara says. Lo shel goy ve lo shel gavola. Right? What? Oh, it's one second. Lecha, midichtiv lecha. Mashmi, it's about like 40% down the page. Mashmi nashal chayi tarava tarava bigvun shal achirem. That implies that you're not allowed to see your chametz, but you can see others. What does others mean? Kigo nachri v'shal gavala, meaning a non-Jews or the Beit HaMikdash, right? Or belonging to the Beit HaMikdash. So according to Rashi, lecha doesn't tell you you need to own it. What does it tell you? It means it can't be belonging to a non-Jew or Beit HaMikdash, like those who are holy other, not holy.
Right.
Holy.
Okay.
Fundamentally different. Fundamentally not yours. Fundamentally other. Okay? Right? So, if our question now is, Yimatzei tells us that Lecha tells me there needs to be some sort of ownership, but it has different definitions. And then we have to ask, what are those different definitions? Are they telling us that ownership is not really needed? Or that ownership is needed, but maybe even partial ownership is enough? Right? So the first test case is, what if you have a Jew's chametz? Right? Because the Gemara only tells you that Lecha excludes that of a non-Jew and the Beit HaMikdash. What if I have another Jew's chametz in my property? So do I violate? So if you think that I need ownership, right, and then all these other cases which sound like they're not ownership really are about ownership, then if something is literally not mine at all, it just happens to belong to a Jew, I'm still going to say that I don't violate because I lack partial ownership. Right? But if I say that, no. All these cases like Achrayu tell us that not only is there different definitions, but ownership is not really needed, right? What you need is something else, like a relationship with the chametz. Then what?
Then what? It's
right? That I can even violate with chametz that's totally not mine.
So that's...
Right?
Yeah, but you need
lacha. Ah, but Rashi says that lacha just means that you don't violate if it belongs to a goy or the Beit HaMikdash.
Is that less strict?
What?
Isn't that less strict?
No, it's more strict. And therefore, if it belongs to a Jew...
Don't violate it if it belongs to someone.
No, I don't violate if it belongs to a goy or the Beit HaMikdash. But if it belongs to another Jew, Rashi says I do violate when it's in my property.
Would Tosfos say the same thing, that if it's a goy, then you wouldn't violate?
Everyone agrees that if it's a goy, you don't violate. The question is, what if it's a Jew's? So according to Magen Avraham and the Bach Romeinu David, even if I have another Jew's chametz in my house, I don't violate, because it's not mine. Rashi, according to Gra, says no. If it belongs to another Jew and it's in my property, I don't even need achrayut. Right? The very fact that I have a Jew's chametz in my house makes it chayv, because the chayv isn't telling you the ownership per se. Right? It's telling you that it can't belong to a guy.
What if there are also deos that say that only is partial ownership to be over?
That's what we're going to see. We're going to see. Okay?
Okay.
Let's at least see one more manifestation of this. Look at the Ramban. Okay? The Ramban on, this is the Ramban on Vav Amud Aleph. Okay? The Ramban on Vav Amud Aleph is dealing with a case we haven't seen inside, but the Gemara there distinguishes between a case of Yichid Lo Bayit and not Yichid Lo Bayit. That if I give a non-Jew his own space in my property, so then I don't violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh. Okay? Right, so if I don't say to the guy, I'm going to accept the chayit, I say, listen, you want to put the chametz in fine, you put it right over there, right? Which implies that I'm not taking responsibility, right? You put it there, and whatever happens, happens. For these purposes, yes, that's what we've assumed, right? That was part of the Segunda of Dalet. And it'll be part of the Segunda of Av also. So the Gemara there says that you don't violate when you are miyached by it, okay? So Ramban says, why not? So look at the top of the next page. Aval perish yichad lo bayit ein zakuk livayir. If I gave the non-Jew a space, I don't have to get rid of the chametz. Aval pishev kido b'achrayat kalmar. So the Ramban is mechadesh. The simple pshat is, as I said, is that's because it's a way of not having achrayot. I'm telling the guy, put it over there, and whatever happens, happens. The Ramban says, no. Even if I tell the guy, I will take achrayot, I'll take responsibility for it. If I tell him, but you have to put it in this space, I'm not liable. Why not? Because salka da'idach me'ikara mishum s'chirat kanya v'haver le'beito shel goy. So originally the Gemara said maybe it's because it's if I'm renting the property to him. And therefore, if it's a rental, so it's his, as Avi just asked. And chametz of the goy in his own property, even if I accept responsibility, I'm not liable. Because the only time in which I become liable for Balira Balimatzeh is if I accept responsibility for the Jew, for the non-Jews chametz, and I take it into my property. If it gets destroyed, I have to pay for it. I accept liability.
That's what I was asking. Yeah. Instead of chametz, it just doesn't make sense.
No, that's what it means. I accept responsibility. Like, whatever happens to it, I pay. Right? Kach v'hershom enutam v'ken kadav arayv itzal. I thought that this was only about the chametz of a goy. Until I found the mechilta. The mechilta says as follows: in your house, lama ne'emar. Why does it say in your house? Because before that it said in all of your boundaries. Shomani kimashmao. I might have thought that you're only chayev if you're chayev even if it's in your boundaries. Tamad lomer b'vatechem. Ma beitcha b'yeshutcha, v'gulcha b'yeshutcha. Just like your house is in your ownership, so too your boundaries are in ownership. Yatza chimcho shel Yisrael shehu b'yeshut nachri. This includes your chametz that is in the non-Jew's house. Aval pishu yachalu varo. Aval eino birshuto. Even if I can destroy it, but it's not in your shoot. Yatachimzo shall nacheshu birshuto shall Yisrael. And it excludes chametz of a non-Jew that is in my house. The chametz enafla mapolet. If you have chametz that a house fell on it, aval birshuto, even though it's in your shoot, aval eino yachalu varo, but I can't destroy it. What do I learn from this? La madnu mikan shedin chimtzo chi Yisrael atzmo kedin chametz shenachrei shekibo alav achrayut. That the Jew's chametz is similar to the non-Jew's chametz for which the Jew has accepted liability. Utravayu, and in both cases, birshut Yisrael over birshut agoy eino over debatechem k'tiv.
Catch what he just said? That whether it's your chametz or the non-Jew's chametz, which you accepted liability for, you only violate if it's in your property. But if I own chametz and I leave it by the non-Jew on a biblical level, according to the Ramban, I don't violate Balyar Bali Matzeh. If you didn't say that Nimtid Omer Chametz Shel Chavil Mufkar Begad Goy B'Yeracher not to overlook. Because if not, you would have said that your Chametz left by somebody else, you're not liable. Even though it's not in your house and not your Rashut. Chametz She'enu Shel Chavil B'Veitecha Eino to overlook. Right? Chametz which is not yours, even your house you don't violate. But Torah Amma Gvulcha V'Teichem. But the Torah says, in your gvul and your bayit. So he says, what do I learn from Bal Yairah, Bal Yimatzeh? And that's why I gave it to you now.
That I need to arrive at two things. What are they? Ownership plus
in your
house.
Right? And therefore he says, right? But
ownership is what?
Has a different definition, right? So remember we said the chametz balyar balyimatzeh is both stricter and less strict. That's what the Ramban says. He says, look, it's stricter in the sense that what? I'm liable even for that. Even if I have non-Jews chametz for which I accepted liability, I violate. But it's less strict because
even my own
chametz in somebody else's house on a biblical level,
you're not.
I don't violate. So according to the Ramban, what do I learn about Bali or Bali Matzeh? Is it stricter, less strict, or does it just have a completely different conceptualization? Yeah, it's a completely different conceptualization. Meaning, the Isser is, don't relate to Chametz. That has certain leniencies and certain stringencies. It has leniencies because even if I don't own something, I might relate to it. Namely, if a Goy has his Chametz in my house and I accepted liability, so I care whether this Chametz survives, because if it doesn't survive, I need to pay for it. That's a problem. But if it's my chametz off, 100 miles away, even though it's my chametz, do I have anything to do with the chametz? No, I just own it, but I have nothing to do with it on Pesach. Right?
For Tosfos, would only the first half of that matter, really? Because, even if it's not in your house, you still care about it?
Possibly. Okay. Right? I don't know whether Tosfos would agree with this statement. Right? So, okay, I know this is a little complicated, so maybe we'll stop here and we'll come back to this tomorrow, okay? But the first half of this year, what we dealt with was a continuation of yesterday, right? Was, is Bali Rabbi Yimatzeh in the end of the day, are they the same or not? Now what we move to is that the Gemara clearly introduces Lecha, but there's a tension. Because on the one hand, the Gemara clearly says you need 7% of ownership. Wait till I'm finished. No. On the one hand, the Gemara demands lecha, which implies ownership. On the other hand, the Gemara brings cases like achrayut, where I clearly what? Don't own it. So what do I do with this? So one possibility is to say that every case that looks like I don't own it, I really do own it, because ownership is required. On the other hand, what you could say is, no, we have the wrong conceptualization here, right? Is that it's not really about ownership, it's about something else. Right, it's about relating to the chametz, and if that's the case, I would expect both kulot and chumrah. The first nafkamina we saw of this is, what about another Jew's chametz in my property? So,
if I think that lacha means ownership, so then I would possibly mug in Abraham Bach or Ben David. If I have another Jew's chametz in my house, do I violate? No, because I don't own it, right? But if I say that no, the whole point is that we have to reconceptualize what it means, so then you might go with Rashi. Rashi says, lacha doesn't tell me I need to own it. What does lacha tell me? It can't be a goyis. It can't be an akum. But if it's another Jew's chametz, do I relate to it?
Yes.
Possibly. And therefore, according to Rashi in the Gra, even though I don't own it, I violate. Nafkamina what?
Also, lacha could have been thrown.
Correct. So. Second is the Ramban. Is that the Ramban is machadesh, that there's both a kula and a chumra. On the one hand, if I own chametz, but it's not in my property, it's in a goy's property, so he says I don't violate. On the other hand, if a goy gives me property and I accept liability, and it's in my property, I do violate. So then you'll ask me, how could that be? How could it be that on the one hand we're lenient, and even though you own chametz, you're not violating, on the other hand we're strict, that despite the fact that you don't own it, you violate? The point is, because according to Ramban, like Rashi, right, like Tosfos and Chavtet, the proper way to conceptualize Bal Yirah Bal Yematzeh is that something else is going on here. It's not really about ownership. It's about a certain type of relating to it, and that comes with certain leniencies and stringencies, okay? Here's what I want you to do for tomorrow. I'm going to send you more Makarot. I gave you an English article on it. These issues are very complicated. Yay. What I would like you to do is realize, I want you to read, basically, if you can, like read an Amud, right? Like basically read to the bottom of Vav Amud Aleph, even though we're not going to cover everything tomorrow. But I want you to see there's like five or six cases of these borderline ownership. Right? There's the case of Mashkon, there's a case of Davar Agorim Lamamon, there's a case of Arnona. We're not going to do all of them tomorrow, but I want you to do is understand that this question of whether, right, what we need is ownership and we have to redefine ownership, or we don't really need ownership, it's about something else, comes up over and over, and we're going to at least touch on how it manifests in a few of these cases. How many of them we'll do, I don't know, right? So finish the Makarot here, and then the Makarot that I send you tomorrow, okay? Wow.